Thank you for visiting ChristopherMedia.net.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, what are you guys up to?
Oh, a little weed, you know.
It's the Weedsman Podcast Nugget.
Zippity what?
Ready to drop the bass? Let's drop the bass.
Whoop-de-doo. What does it all mean?
All the random stuff that didn't fit in Friday's show you'll find here.
Oh.
Okay.
Hey, man. You got a joint?
Got a little bit of reefer smell on your boy?
What that mean?
Please, give me, like, weed, all right?
Google. Oh, I keep shutting it down in Google. I think it comes with every new update. It resets some of the Google settings, or the Chrome settings, I should say. It keeps prompting me, asking if I want to restore my previous sessions, the windows that were open, right? Which it may as well say, do you want to embarrassingly open up all the porn that you were looking at last now that your computer is in public?
Yeah.
Would you like the volume on full, 100?
Come on, Google. There's people around. Don't do this to me,
cool.
Google.
Well, see, you know.
Come on, Google. Be cool.
Google should be cool. And knowing how many people use the internet for porn now, actually, it's not so much that we use the internet for porn. It's that I don't know where else we access porn. Like, the internet is the sole source.
What? You want me to buy it now?
Well, even if you, I mean, people subscribe to it, whether they subscribe or they just browse or they have, like, you know, their favorite porn stars that they're into and they follow and sometimes even donate directly to their Patreon. So it's not about, like, whether they're paying for it or not, but, like, it's all going through the internet.
Yeah.
Did you realize I was doing Donald Trump hand signals thing?
Yeah.
I was doing the kind of patty cake thing where the hands come together a little bit to show, like, the size of his dick, and then they go out to show, like, the size of the fish that he caught.
Or it could be, you know, maybe he's going to suck it.
It is kind of a suck it. It's that.
Hey, you know, suck it.
You know what? Right
suck
here.
My balls. Right here.
Oh, he's infecting our nation.
Oh.
I'm starting to act like him.
Ha. Dude, did you see this piece of shit I sent you earlier?
I didn't listen to it.
Oh.
The Helter Skelter.
Strap in. It's the battle of the processed vocalists.
This was in response to the
This came out
tweet
last week. Oh, damn it. Hold on.
Oh, this is a new thing?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll vamp. There I was going to bring up the
I guess they.
So this is Rob Zombie and
Marilyn Manson.
And Marilyn Manson doing.
Listen, it's the battle of the process vocalists. You can't tell who's singing ever.
Now we got to get you two out there to do another cover of it, so they could be like, "This is a song that Charles Manson stole from the Beatles, and then Rob Zombie and Marilyn Manson stole it from." Back from him after we gave it back to him already once, so now we gotta come out and do our cover again so we can give it back to the Beatles. Why?
Yeah. Like, when I heard this, I was like, why? Why was
this? This is great.
Why do we need this?
This tweet from Shane in Blood or Metal Shane 2000.
Yes.
This is not somebody I follow. I think somebody that I follow is, like, retweeting this and heavily liking it. But it just is in a Rob Zombie voice. Well, I'm going to do it. Well, Frankenstein, motherfucker, Raggedy Ann. Oh, wait, I don't have the cadence right.
Frankenstein, motherfucker,
well, Frankenstein, motherfucker, Raggedy Ann. Oh, see, this is how I heard it. Oh, Frankenstein, motherfucker, Raggedy Ann, Chupacabra, Hot Rod, Invisible Man, Grindhouse, Mama Lava, Flash in the Pan, Beep, Boop, Beep, Boop, Godzilla, Japan. And then ending in palm-muted power chord.
See, I went more with the Dragula cadence.
The Dragula cadence? You'll have to remind me of that. I was doing pretty much Death Valley 69, or what is that called?
Thunderkiss 65.
Something like that. I think I will always refer to that as, like, Death
like
Valley.
White Zombie.
Oh.
I was off the Rob Zombie train, like, when this shit came out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was when I was a teenager, and it was some fun metal, and, yeah. It was kind of during that Nine Inch Nails thing, like, there wasn't... when Nine Inch Nails came out,
techno was going mainstream, so they were trying to put it in everything.
I understood the techno and industrial influence in bands like Nine Inch Nails and Rob Zombie and Marilyn Manson and all that stuff, but none of it made me go back and want to listen to. And just like most of the industrial, it was very gothic in nature too. Like, just didn't really appeal to me. The Front 242 stuff.
Yeah.
A little bit of Nitzarev, maybe. I wasn't even that big of a Depeche Mode fan.
I like Nine Inch Nails.
But Nine Inch Nails really struck it. I mean, he found that that cross between metal and industrial that really clicked. I mean, Heaping Spoonfuls of Teen Angst.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it was adult angst for him at that point, but
his mid-90s soul records.
I mean,
I saw them with them in a Perfect Circle when they came around in 99.
I don't think I've ever seen Nine Inch Nails live. I'm pretty sure I haven't. I was trying to think if there were any festivals that I might have seen. Like, he has to have done Lollapaloozas, but I don't think it was any of the. Maybe it was the first one. So, like, I didn't go. I went to the second, third, and fourth, I believe, and then really nothing after that. Can't.
Like, if I've never heard Closer again, I wouldn't care.
I mean, that song's fucked out.
Yeah, that's the problem. It's like, the radio just beat the shit out of it.
Right. And that censored version, too, which is kind of funny.
See, now I'm hearing Rob Zombie. Now I'm hearing those Rob Zombie lyrics. They're right over this beat.
It was a little fast for Rob Zombie.
I saw
like
Rob Zombie
speed.
Once. I saw him when he toured with Ozzy Osbourne. So when I was working in radio, so I got free tickets.
This wasn't White Zombie.
This is Rob Zombie when he was on tour for the whole Hillbilly Deluxe, or no, the one that came out after it, the one that came out in like 2000 or whatever. But all I remember about seeing him,
yeah, it was Texas
something
was by that point.
Something was on fire the entire time while he was on stage.
Really,
and he always sounded out of breath because he was running around. I was like, "Wow, he's not that great live."
Well, I mean, at least he wasn't, you know,
just staying in there.
No, well, that or singing to a, or not even singing, like lip syncing.
That's true. Yeah,
you know, that's what
he was actually his own vocals.
That's tough. You know, I don't know, a metal act, I'm not necessarily calling him a metal act, but it's the same type of shows. A lot of crossover fans, I'm sure. It's kind of hard to, like, unless you're just bad, have a bad metal show, right?
Yeah, that's true.
You know, like, it's such a live experience, and, you know, unless you're, like, just literally fucking up the songs.
I don't know. It's to being a metal band.
Like, I don't know. For me, like,
some bad metal. Played with some bad metal bands.
Sure, but there's metal bands that I've seen live, and I was like, they were great. And then someone's like, oh, I got their album. I'm like, you can keep that shit. I'm never going to listen to it at home. You know? But if they roll around again, I'll go out and see them.
No, I don't know. There's just some bands, you play with them, and the whole object is just, their music is, how fast can we play? How loud can we scream?
Yeah. And there's part of that I really appreciate. You know? That's kind of what I'm saying. It's like, it's like a pizza, right? You know? If you can't get like a unique, good pizza, then just put a lot of cheese on it, right?
Just drown it in cheese. The answer to everything.
I mean, well, Rich and I were talking about this last night, and I think, who did we pull? Oh, Eddie Van Halen was I blamed as the creator of sports musicians, where that really caught on with metal musicians, too. Where it was just like, you were saying, like, how fast can we go? You know, how many, you know, can our drummer can do, you know, steady eights on the kit, on the double kit. Mine can do 16. Mine can do 30 seconds. And then guys are like doing 64 beats with their feet.
Stunt musicians. Like, that's it. Me and Rob St. Mary, formerly of Projection Booth Podcast, here at ChristopherMedia.net. That's what we call them, stunt musicians.
Yeah. And there was very much a mentality. And I don't know, like, that's something that certainly I've scoffed at in my youth. But seeing these guys perform live, I have an appreciation for it.
I get that. But at the same time, you know, it's just...
And those are more the type of bands where, like, yeah, I'll go out and see them. Because if it's a local metal band for $5 and you probably got, like... Well, I don't know how much it is now. It's probably way more than that. What was it? Rich showed me a picture of his buddy who was at Def Leppard. Right, and he had seats that he paid $375 a pop for, and he took a picture with his phone, and they were so far away. And this was at Comerica Park, the new Tiger Stadium.
That's 20 years old.
Well, yeah, it's, right. And I understand, like, they have a field and a diamond there in the middle of it, and they don't want people just tramping all over it.
Yeah, Leppard sucks!
But his seats were on the other side of the field, right? So there's, like, people who have decent seats, and then this huge grass field, and then him. Yeah, like, they were bigger. They have, like, monitors, video monitors up there where people watch them on.
I don't know about this song. It was when I was a DJ in a bar, it was... Every women of every age love this song. Fucking 21-year-old chicks, 51-year-old chicks, and everybody in the middle love this song.
So this was, but this song had already been out for a while at that point, right?
No, at this point it's classic rock for these people,
right?
It's awful.
See,
rock.
I remember it coming out as the new Def Leppard song. And
I was one of those kids in 1991 that was like, "Yes, kill all of this music.
Oh,
kill all of it. Get rid of all of this."
I was into it, but I had already outgrown it before it started becoming unpopular. You know, of course.
I was never into this music, even when
it was like the most indie rock thing I've ever said. I think.
When this was the hot shit in second grade and everyone had hysteria, it's like, this shit is awful.
Did you say hysteria?
I don't want no part of this.
Now, you know, honestly, I'm not completely mad at Def Leppard, but they're kind of like Duran Duran for me. You know, I'm not going to put on a full album. But every once in a while, I got to hear either Photograph or, you know, Hungry Like a Wolf.
No. Oh, thanks, man.
Def Leppard sucks!
But to pay almost $400 a ticket to see a band,
I'm a little high, I didn't catch that earlier. Almost $400 a ticket to see Def Leppard?
Yeah. And to barely be able to actually see them...
Well, I paid like $125 to see Paul McCartney, and that's like the most I'm ever going to pay to ever see anybody. And that was like 10 years ago. Like,
I don't know, maybe this is like scalper prices that he paid or something.
I was just like, it's a Beatle. He could die next week. You never know.
That seems within the realm of possibility.
Didn't know he's
going
to live to be 80.
Yeah, you know, there's no way. I can't think of who I would go see for $375. I mean... It better be everyone. Like, you better get all my favorite musicians on that stage.
I want to see a reunited Nirvana. Figure it out with Kurt Cobain, with technology and science. I want to see Alice in Chains with Layne Staley for $375. And I want Tupac to open.
And those are the back seats.
Like, yeah.
What are the people in the front paying?
Four-digit tickets, man.
Oh, easily. Yeah.
Have you seen some people might have paid $10,000 to see fucking Def Leppard? Please tell me we don't live in this world.
Well, this is their primary source of income now, right? And they ain't getting shit from streaming. And,
nobody is.
Right. So, yeah, I would imagine there's probably 10 grand and up ticket packages where you get to go back stage and meet them and, I don't know, do some simulated blow. It's like a whole virtual experience.
The woman you're with looks 20 years younger. It's the light in the room.
Right. They have all of Def Leppard looks 20 years younger. Actually, it's not even them. They just like skin them. They have stand-ins that are like, "All right, mate. Bloody good show."
Did they give the drummer like a hologram arm since we have the technology yeah. now?
Yeah.
Is he still with them?
I mean, speaking of virtual, though, imagine what that show is going to sound like. Probably either dog shit or just like the album, in which case, stay at home, get a 24-pack, and turn up your stereo. You know, watch some live footage on YouTube. Because, you know, again, this isn't even Def Leppard, but just about damn near everybody is working with a digital board where somebody goes, all right, got my guitar tone on there, and he pushes the button. There it is. Just like the album. Perfect. Let's plow through this 45-minute set so I can get back to masturbating and playing video games on the bus. What is this? I was going to ask you, actually, because I've been going down this like 90s music rabbit hole. I just heard a Wolverine reference. I've never heard this song. Is this 90s or is this... This looks actually a little bit newer, maybe.
I typed in the drummer from Def Leppard only has one arm and did Google Music, and it kept bringing me this song.
This is
not what I was looking for.
Bloodhound Gang?
Yes.
It's not a bad little song. That's, what's the... I don't know if they're exactly sampling it. It sounds like they're playing
it.
But...
I know fucking exactly what song it is.
Yeah, fucking Dusty Springfield, Spooky. Ah, this is my jam. This would have made a good loop.
This wasn't the hit.
This is my preferred version, but you're right. You can play the more popular one.
Was it this one?
Who did the one that actually, like, was it the one that everyone knows? Classics 4?
No, god damn it.
I think I got it. I think it's Classics 4, like IV, the Roman numerals.
It's his re-recording, though. God damn. All right. I gotta bring Google on the case.
I typed in spooky song, and that was the first hit on YouTube. Yeah, that one.
No! Now, trust me, as someone who's heard its share of oldies, I know what I'm looking for.
It's not the Atlanta Rhythm Section?
No.
Yeah, that would be too new. Buddy Bowie? James Cobb?
There we go.
Yeah. But this is the Classics 4. Yeah.
It doesn't even say who the fuck this is.
I think that's it said Classics 4. I think that's the name of the artist. I think this guy's voice.
Yeah, this is the hit. This is one that's on all the oldie stations.
I mean, used to be. Now, like, oldie stations are starting to be like, they're playing Huey Lewis on the news. God. I'm like, fuck
no,
you,
this
man.
Is, no,
fuck
this you. Is like grandpa music now.
Yeah.
This is like when we were kids, when our grandpas were listening to, like, the big bands and shit.
Right.
This is now this for the new generation.
Original music written by Harry Middlebrooks and Mike Sharp.
Oh, the elusive rock and roll saxophone solo.
I was all into sax solos when I was a kid. When I was a kid, I loved music. I loved a lot of classic rock, too. That was my parents' record collection. And But I did. I had no interest in playing guitar at the time. You know, grunge music got me into guitar. Originally, I wanted to play saxophone, but, you know, I'm an asthmatic.
It's hard.
And it's hard as fuck.
I played it. I was very good at it. Yeah. I was better at guitar.
And a rather pricey investment for somebody that, like, we don't even know if he has the lung power to blow this thing. I dig that guitar tone, too.
That old 60s garage rock, man.
Yeah. I was going to ask you if you had any 90s songs that don't get played anymore that you would consider a hidden gem these days.
As far like rock songs?
Anything. Just anything in the 90s.
This is like the first one that comes to mind for some reason. I thought this was a cool little tune.
Was this something that actually got radio play?
Oh, yeah. This was the radio beat the shit out of this song. Like, the year that it was out, and then, like, you never heard it again.
This doesn't sound familiar to me at all. Who is this?
The Hunger.
So, like, the alternative radio stations were on this?
The alternative, the mainstream rock stations.
Oh, really?
Anybody like, who played rock music was like, playing this song. And they were playing the shit out of it. And then it just vaporized.
Kind of sound like a techno Caius.
Kicks in here in a second.
I imagine so because it's got to have a lot of dynamics to it. If it's 90s.
It's 90s, yeah. It's got to be loud and quiet.
Where's the loud part?
Right here.
There it is. Yeah, I probably heard this.
God, if you want to talk 90s music, we could be here for like 4 hours.
I didn't really have anything prepared, so let's. This is interesting.
That's a cool little rock song.
It's kind of got a little bit of Living Color vibe to it, yeah. Too. That's nice.
It's a decent solo. It's not too wanky.
Yeah. Little twist in there, dropping the tempo during the guitar solo. What year is this? Because, like,
I think this is like 95.
All right. Because that's before techno started seeping into, well, everything.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's just a right around the cusp of that happening where people weren't...
Oh, 1996.
1996, yeah.
The album came out.
So, because the synth sounds that they're using sound like stuff that would be going on in, like, Orbital and and the Orb and other O bands that...
And what happened to this band?
Didn't they have already, like, kind of a comeback album?
I was not...
Like a post-2000 album. Yeah, I was all right with this. Like, I think I listened to the album, but there were only a few tracks that really caught me.
I think one of them ended up being some kind of producer or some shit.
Like a music producer?
Yeah. Like her manager or something.
I was racking my brain the other day trying to... This is what got me on like a 90s thing.
What was that?
I was trying to figure out... I was thinking about... I had asked Emily. Maybe we'll get her on the podcast. She's not uninterested. It's just scheduling doesn't work out. But... When, for whatever reason, I was thinking of Emily, and I was thinking of a song where the lyrics were Emily, or at least at the time I thought they were. And I could hear the chorus and everything in my head, and I was like, fuck, who is that? And I was like, it was some band. I had a couple albums by them, and then they just kind of disappeared. It was mid-90s, maybe even early 90s, and I couldn't, but that's all I could come up with. And then this chorus of Emily, Emily, just going over and over in my head. I couldn't get any work done until I was at work thinking this, and I'm like, I can't get anything. I can't think about anything else until I find out what this song is. And so I'm searching. It's a very power poppy song. So I'm searching and then for all this stuff, and I'm coming across a lot of stuff that I still listen to, like Matthew Sweet and Teenage Fan Club, and then other stuff that I had forgotten about, like Gigolo Ants. Remember they had the song on the Dumb and Dumber soundtrack, Where I Find My Heaven.
I
was like,
Gigolo Ants was a band name that I saw a lot, but I don't think I ever heard anything by them.
It was one of those. I think they were like a band's band. Like all these bands really liked them, but they never really caught a larger audience. But yeah, I was stumbling across in my search through the internet to try and find what I eventually found. Or I think I found a reference.
This band just sounds like 1993.
Yeah. I mean, this could be like a Jim Blossom song. They actually have some cool stuff on their previous album.
But you know where the jangly 90s fucking guitar band...
Toad the Wet Sprocket?
No. Whoever produced Out of Time, that person started it.
Yeah, I wonder who did produce that album. I mean, it's a gorgeous sounding album.
Like right here. This is 1991. Mm-hmm. This is setting the pattern for pop songs for the next 10 years.
Right. And
for guitar pop songs.
A lot of bands, like 10,000. Well, I guess 10,000 Maniacs.
Well, weren't they contemporaries of R.E.M.?
I guess. R.E.M. goes back a little deeper, I think. But
oh, yeah, they go back to like the early 80s.
Right.
But this is when America met, mainstream America met R.E.M.
Well, this would eventually spawn a whole radio station called The River.
Yeah, no, right.
And a lot of songs that I would rather forget about. I haven't listened to this album in a while.
Dude, I mean, taking back right now. I'm in a time machine.
I listened to the fuck out of this album.
For some reason, I was like 12 or 13, yeah. And this album resonated with me for some reason. I don't know fucking why.
So I would have been like, what am I, 4 years older than you?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I would have been like...
You're 76?
75.
Yeah, so 4 years.
4 years, okay. Yeah, so I'm like... 15, 16 years old when this came out.
Like, I would listen to this, like, walking to school and shit.
So was your introduction to R.E.M. MTV, like, seeing the Losing My Religion video, or did you know about them beforehand?
Yes.
Yeah.
It got me into all the old shit, though.
Right, because I probably listened to Green more times than I've listened to Out of Time. And even though, like, Out of Time is a sonically superior album, but Green is all over the place.
Yeah, well, that made me look at this album and go, this is like, oh, okay, it's a big commercial album. Right. You start realizing this.
Well, Shiny Happy People is almost like a coda to, what was it, Stand,
yeah.
Off of Green, which was a song that, and there's so many examples of it in music where an artist says, well, we had this really dumb song and we had no good lyrics for it, but we recorded it anyways.
Yeah.
And then we were going to do nothing with it. And the producer heard it and he was like, no, this is a hit.
Yeah. There's something here. Let's turn this into something.
And then, like, okay. But I ain't mad. I mean, I think I like Stand more than I like this song. I actually... I would, just to pretty much delight a few people in my art class and make the rest of them mad, I would stand up on my desk. I was such a piece of shit in high school, right? I thought I was the best artist, and I probably was, like, technically the best at, like, doing figure drawing and stuff like that. That was saying all that much, but I was in I think my second year of art class, and they didn't really have a level up of a space where you can go. So you just got these big desks. They were almost like drafting tables that was like fortressed off in the back of the art room. Right. So that was mine and sometimes some other people's areas. But
I can see this going awry.
Right. So when I would stand up on the drafting table, I would flatten it out and I'd stand up and I would do the stand dance. You know, Where you, they like swing their arms around and then they like, now face west, and then you turn.
Let's find the video.
But what my search really was is in for the songs that escaped your memory, right? The stuff that, like, you heard it for a summer when you were a preteen or a teenager, and it was, like, the best song on the radio, but you never picked up the album for whatever reason, and it just, you forgot about it. Radio forgot about it, forgot about it.
I think that Hunger song classifies.
But I did finally find the song that was by the best kissers in the world that was stuck in my brain. I found out that it wasn't called Emily, it was Melanie, but it still fits.
You did that dance, huh?
I did, yes. That was the dance.
Why? I mean, that had to be a joke.
I think the song, we got to play music at times, and somebody did bring in Green, and I started doing that. And then
I was just talking about in the video. Like, why are they doing this?
Because they need something. You know, okay, the answer to every...
Like, these guys are ugly. Let's put four other people in the video.
You've seen, especially the pre-out-of-time REM videos, all have a lot of rather weird things going on in them. And it's because Michael Stipe refused to lip sync on a video.
Now,
they had, like, from something that was pre-Green, there was a video that they had for the single for that album, but it was actually a live performance. Actually, Nine Inch Nails did that later.
So Soundgarden.
Instead of just doing the single and we'll lip sync along with it, they're like, no, let's just perform it, you know, and that will be the video version.
Yes.
So they did that. But yeah, Michael Stipe, I think, and I'm trying to think, even going into Out of Time, there was videos for quite a number. Actually, didn't they do videos for all those songs? Damn near, because I remember having a VHS copy of all the videos from that.
For all of them? I mean, I know they did for Shiny Happy People, for Losing My Religion.
They had a video for Night Swimming. They had...
You're talking about Out of Time?
Yeah, Night Swimming is on Out of Time, isn't it?
No.
What album is Night Swimming on?
Monster?
That's on Monster.
Oh,
yeah, never mind.
No.
Yeah, so I had a video compilation. Never mind. That's my question. Not all these songs are on Out of Time.
Conversation about REM.
And then I got to go.
You got to be a monster.
And then I got to be like, what's the frequency, Kenneth? Pow.
Was that like we're running out of ideas, or Guitar Rock is selling, so make a Guitar Rock album?
That was Achtung Baby.
We got a lot of blow. Let's make an album.
It's when we came back around to feeling like it's okay to dress up and have a little artifice behind the in front of the music again, right? Grunge was a hard press against glam. It was like, we don't even fuck like doing our hair and picking out clothes. Like, we don't even bathe before we go on stage. Yeah. Like, they wanted to look the antithesis of that. And, you know, REM wasn't so grungy, but they were typically downplayed, you know, flannel shirts and baggy t-shirts and shit, and like, you know, every once in a while a weird bowler hat or something. but not a fan of this album.
Like,
this album has some good songs on it. I don't know.
What was the other one off of this? Bang and Blame, where he's basically just using his toggle switch.
But that's the thing. Like, REM got famous for a sound of an album that was just one step in a process. You know, there's kind of that jangliness that you were describing in those early records, like Murmur and stuff. I'm blanking out on the other titles. But they were so, like, echoey. It was almost like shoegazery.
But, I mean, this was, like their follow-up to...
And Green...
Automatic for the People. Like, this was a huge letdown.
And Green is, like I was saying before, too. Each song to song, is, like, a completely different album, almost, you know? They have these, like, a pop song, and then, like... you know, a non-traditional even rock song. I don't even know. Yeah, I know. There's... Yes, this is not one of the better songs.
He even sounds like he's on the phone. He's wanting to get in that band. It's Michael Stipe, I won't be in today.
He needs to learn, he needs to take lessons from the Midnight Oil guy on how to really deliver even the most confusing of lines.
I mean, this is the pinnacle, right? To me, this was merging their commercialiness of the one before.
Are you sure
it.
Night Swimming isn't on this album? It wasn't on Monster, was it?
No, Night Swimming
is on Automatic for the People. Okay,
yes.
Yeah. Man on the Moon kind of wore out on me really quick. As did Drive, honestly. Like, it's not a bad song. I'm trying to think of what songs would really stand out for me. I think Night Swimming is... Yeah,
of course, this one.
This one, though. Yeah. This is another one, like, it was a nice song, you know, when it came out, and then it just wasn't strong enough to warrant multiple listening.
Movies fucked the song.
Just going to say, yeah.
Movies and TV shows fucked the song way out.
Yeah, like they're sitting there in post making these movies going, boy, this really isn't coming together here. Like these performances, we should have done a couple more takes. Ah, that's all right. We got a license to Everybody Hurts, so yeah. This will be the cue that says, this is where you're supposed to cry at the movie unless you're a complete fucking animal.
So saw Billions. Saw it all.
You're caught up on Billions.
Oh, man. Snubbed again by the Emmys.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Deserving, isn't it?
Why? Why not at least for writing? Or at least Paul Giamatti. Can we get Paul Giamatti an Emmy nomination?
So... There's been so much shit that I've watched. I'm trying to keep track of where everyone left off. We know that Axe and Paul Giamatti's character, what's his name? Damn it.
Chuck Rhodes.
Right, Axe and Chuck have come together again. Like, they came together to save Wendy, right?
Yes.
And then they come back together.
So now they're going to come together to fuck the people who just fucked them over.
Right. They're going to collectively... take down the guy who's supposed to make Chuck governor.
So disappointed in Taylor.
You're
doing acts like that.
You're mad at Taylor?
Yeah, man. Taylor wouldn't be opening, Taylor Mason Capital without the opportunities given by Axe.
Okay, but wasn't it understood that Taylor wanted nothing more than to do Axe's job, to be, you know, that to run her own company, right?
I believe you have to say they.
I'm sorry.
I noticed that when he was making the speech.
Yeah. Yes, he was more considerate than I am. No, I'm just forgetting. But yes, so they wanted to run their own company. They're our audience.
True.
They wanted to run their own company, and that was always going to be the end result for that character.
Mm-hmm.
And
setting up a new enemy.
She was working for Axe in order to prove herself and to learn from Axe. And it was definitely understood, even by Axe, that this was a mentor relationship, right?
Mm-hmm.
What are you grooming a person for? I mean... did he really think that he was grooming Taylor to work for him forever?
Maybe. Probably not. He knew, yeah.
I think if you had to ask Axe as a character point blank, he would say, no, of course. This person is too powerful,
you know,
too special, too smart to fail, and eventually it's going to be competition for me one day, right?
It's fucking robot,
But he also understood that there is a lot that he could gain from that person on the way up, right? So this all happened sooner than he thought it would. That's the issue, right?
He's going to have Malkovich fucking with him?
Because everything that Taylor did, she learned from Axe.
It's true.
Did it from watching you, Axe.
Yeah, I learned it by watching you.
Now, unfortunately, she seems to have learned some of the lessons that were best forgotten, like getting involved with John Malkovich and his weird eye.
Yeah.
Because, fuck, man, like, I was really freaking out over them teasing the Russian dude, actually, like, saying that he was going to, you know, take care of Taylor. Like, hey, you've got a problem, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And there's ways that we take care of problems in Russia. So you don't have to say anything other than we both understand we want a problem taken care of. I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do if they kill Taylor.
Wow.
So I was very satisfied with that. And I didn't see her as a traitor at all. I saw her as coming into her own. And, you know, I feel... I like Axe as a character, but I feel zero guilt over anything. Like, not guilt, but like, I don't have empathy for his failings, right? Because I see them as all self-made. I don't see anyone as like out to get Axe. I know he sees himself as constantly, you know, having to fight people off and you know, feels constantly embattled. Everyone's always attacking him, right? And he's got to defend his castle. And I'm just like, these are all problems of your own making that you're as insightful as a guy as he is as a character. Like, he is so blind to his own ego, his own hubris, right? He can't help it.
Yeah, but I mean, he's telling Mandy, he's like, but he's supposed to be the villain, and I always find myself rooting for him.
Well, but that he was always the villain that you were kind of rooting for, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, did you feel good seeing him, you know, actually get those close calls where, you know, he was actually...
No, I was like, no, can't take Bobby Axe down.
Right.
What's Billions without Bobby Axe? Did you see the Emmy nominations?
No. I just,
Netflix... HBO is no longer the belle of the ball. Netflix had like 112 nominations. They had the most
HBO
of
has
any.
Been slipping, you know?
HBO makes you wait. Netflix is just like content. But I just think what's really going on is, and I think this is a message to all of the production houses and studios, like, hey, assholes, if you let the artists control their content...
We should start the show. This is something
this
that we
show
can talk
material.
Yeah, I think so.
All right.
If you like this show, please tell a friend. Please follow us on Twitter and like and share us on Facebook by searching for Christopher Media. You can subscribe to all ChristopherMedia.net shows for free on ChristopherMedia.net. Please make sure to rate and comment on all your favorite Christopher Media shows. Thank you in advance for supporting Christopher Media by clicking on the PayPal button and by clicking through to all the sponsors who support ChristopherMedia.net. Thank you for visiting ChristopherMedia.net and thank you for listening.
Thank you for visiting ChristopherMedia.net.